Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to North San Diego Business at Large, where each week you'll meet some of the movers and shakers in the North San Diego County business community. North San Diego Business at Large is sponsored by Syndicating Your Content, where we bring traffic and income to your website. Visit syndicatingyourcontent.com for more information. Good afternoon. I'm Deborah Simpson coming to you from Carlsbad, California. If any of our listeners are on Twitter, and especially if you're a North San Diego business owner, I'd appreciate you hitting this Tweet This button on the left and let your followers know about the show. If you have a question, you can feel free to call in. The number is 646-929-0096, or you can send me a question via the chat room. It is open. And if you like the show, you can follow the show by tapping the Follow Us button on the show page. Of course, you can keep up with us via iTunes. So today I thought I would just talk a little bit to you directly about the web development process. What happened, and for those of you who listen to me regularly know that I work in WordPress, and I help small startup businesses build their first WordPress website because I love the platform, and I think it's a great way to be able to have a non-programmer give them the ability to be able to keep the content up to date. And the reason I work in WordPress besides that is because I discovered when I came out of McGraw-Hill and I was building websites for their school textbook division, I got into the small business community and I saw small businesses being taken advantage of by unscrupulous website developers. And what happened was they would get a hold of the website and the small business owner had very little option about being able to get it back. So I thought I would just run down a story because it's happened to me now twice in the past 2 weeks. I've taken on two websites where they're having to rebuild the process because of these particular incidences. So let's go into what makes up having a website. The first thing you need, and I'm going to give you an analogy like your block, the block that you live on, and your neighbors on the block. So let's talk about it as being part of a residence. So you have a domain name. The domain name is the www.northsandiegobusiness.com. That's the domain name. So that's like your street address. So wherever you live, whatever, that's if you live at 123 ABC Street, that's your street address. Your domain name is your website address. So you have to have a domain name. And let me just tell you this, and I just want you to pay attention to this piece right here. Whoever owns or purchases the domain name controls the website. You do not want to let the programmer or the word or the website developer purchase your domain name. You purchase your domain name yourself. Almost all of us use GoDaddy for domain names. You can go over there, you can buy your domain name, and then you own it, you control it. Make sure when you're going through the process of purchasing your domain name that you spell it correctly. Because if you don't, and you don't find out within 5 days, you'll have to purchase your domain name again and you'll get stuck with the one with the incorrect spelling. So make sure you've spelled it correctly. So again, the person who purchases the domain name owns the domain name and controls the website because they have the domain name. When we build a website, we tell the domain name to look at the hosting. And the hosting is your house in the neighborhood. Domain name is your address. Hosting is the house. Inside your house, you have all kinds of stuff. Inside your hosting, you have the ability to upload files. You can upload PDFs. You can upload video, audio, images. So your domain or your hosting plan contains all the files and other items that you need to display your website. Domain name is the address, like your house address, to get to your website, like you need the address to get to your house. Your hosting package is your house. Your website contains all the things needed to show people what you're up to on the internet. It's best if you buy your hosting plan as well. What you don't want to do is you don't want your web developer to host your website on his own hosting. So most of us have what we call shared hosting. So it's like the block that you live on. You have a house next to you. That's another website that's on your same block. So on my block, there are probably about 10 or 15 houses. On a shared server, you have different parcels that have been sold to other people for hosting. So if I have a hosting plan and I'm a web developer, I can say to you, my client, oh, don't worry about buying hosting. I'll just host it on my server. What that means is that they completely control all the files related to your website. That's the problem, especially for you, because they don't want to let you into their hosting plan, or they wouldn't let a developer like me go into their hosting plan because their website is hosted on that plan, and they may have any number of websites hosted. So on my personal hosting account over at HostGator, I have NorthSanDiegoBusiness.com hosted there. I have DeborahSimpson.com hosted there. I have WebWithDeb.com hosted there. I have my daughter's website hosted there. So on my hosting plan, I have at least four websites that exist. I'm not going to let a third-party developer have access to my hosting plan to fix something on one of the sites. So you need to be the person to buy your hosting plan. Don't let someone else do that for you. You can give them access to the hosting plan, and therein lies the trust. You want to make sure that whomever you're working with on building your website is someone that you trust. Because if you let them into your hosting and you let them into your domain, and you notice that I don't host my sites at GoDaddy, most of us don't host our sites at GoDaddy, and it's good to keep your domain name separate from your hosting just in case something happens to one or the other of your of the sites. So I'm not about to let anybody into my hosting. So you want to buy your own hosting package yourself, and then you want to be able to trust the person who's building the website for you that they don't change passwords on you. I have had a couple of clients, like I said, that I've had to rescue these past 2 weeks because they were locked out of their websites. One was hosted through the developer's hosting plan, so he wasn't going to give access to me to work on the website. And the other one just completely locked the client out of the WordPress website, rendering it difficult. They removed her as the admin, and that's a problem. So make sure that you get your own domain name and you get your own hosting. And then one of the other components that you need in order to really get your business off the ground is an email service provider. So that's a Constant Contact, Cooler Email. MailChimp is one of the most popular ones around. And to be honest with you, I don't use MailChimp, but I'm impressed with the opportunities to integrate into social media. For instance, with MailChimp, you can create a nice intake form on your Facebook page. So those are email service providers. So let's talk a minute about what an email service provider does. There was an organization I belonged to several years ago. We had about 800 email addresses for our monthly meeting notifications. When it came time to send out the notice about the upcoming meeting, you know, who was going to be the speaker, what was going to be the format, etc., because it was handled through AOL, the list of 800 was broken down into components of 50 email addresses each list. And we would send out 50 emails at a time, bulk emails is what they call them. So in one push of a button, we could send out to 50 email addresses. Then we'd have to move on and do it to the second block of 50 email addresses, and so on and so on. Around the 7th, 8th, 9th time we did this 50 email push, AOL stopped it all, because it looks like you're spamming someone when you do that, and that's what they stopped us for. So every month, our admin who did the email marketing for us would have to call AOL and would have to get them to remove the block so she could finish sending out all of the other emails. That gets to be a problem pretty quickly. So an email service provider is when you have a form on your website and someone can sign up to receive your email newsletters. And there's two ways to do that. We call them opt-ins. There's a single opt-in where, let's say you and I met at a networking event and I have your business card and I said to you, you know, I would love to stay in touch with you. Would you mind if I put you into my email database? And you say, oh, of course, no problem, I'd love that. Then I can come back to my office and I can simply enter your email information into my email service provider. And for lack of a better example, let's just use MailChimp, even though there are many, many, many email service providers for you to choose from. So I come back and I put you into my MailChimp, and now you're in my email database and I can start marketing to you via regularly scheduled emails. That's a single opt-in. That's not always the best choice for you because there are some unscrupulous people, and what they will do is they will go out and they will scan the networking table and they will grab business cards from the networking table, come back to their office and put you into their email database without you even knowing about it, and then all of a sudden you're on an email list. And I've had that happen to me several times. So a single opt-in does not require the person whose email address you're putting into the email database to be able to have a say as to whether they wanted to be put into your email database or not. That's not the best situation. Of course, the first situation is even worse. So by the way, if you are using just your email and you're making up little groups through your email, let's say you're using Gmail, and you're making up a contact group of Carlsbad business owners, and you're wanting to send emails out to them. As long as your internet service provider will let you do that, that's fine. But the one thing you have to do to be able to be compliant with the CAN-SPAM Act is you need to put a disclaimer at the bottom of your email that says, if you would like to unsubscribe from this email, simply reply with unsubscribe in the subject line. So that's one of the things you have to do with the CAN-SPAM Act. Otherwise, the receiver of your email may have two choices, three choices. If they like it, they can open it, read it, and let you and stay on your email list. If they don't like it, you haven't given them a way to unsubscribe from it. Then their only option is to either delete it or to report it as spam. You don't want them to report it as spam. So make sure at the bottom of the email you're sending, if you're simply got a group in your email program, I use Gmail, and you're sending out an email blast to a group of email addresses that you just decided you wanted to market to, you have to make sure to give them a way to unsubscribe from it. So the single option, when you put me into a single option system, say at MailChimp, and I get the email, there's automatically an unsubscribe link at the bottom. So if I don't want your email, I can simply unsubscribe from it. The best way for you to handle your email is through a double opt-in system. So a double opt-in system means that you picked up my business card somewhere, and this just happened to me recently. My business card was picked up somewhere, and I was put into an email database, and I received a confirmation email to asking me to confirm my desire to receive this email. Well, I didn't sign up for the email, so I didn't confirm that. Because I didn't confirm that by tapping the confirmation link, I was not put into the email database, and I don't expect to receive any more email marketing because I haven't opted in. If I click the link that says, yes, I'd like to confirm that I would like to receive your email marketing, then I'm in the whatever group they put me in, and they can feel free to send me email because they have my permission. They sent me an email with a link in it that said, click this to give us permission to send emails to you. So that's a permission-based double opt-in email marketing, and that's what you should be using. I know it's not as easy. It's a lot easier just to collect business cards and load up your email service provider through a single opt-in and start marketing. But I'm telling you, people get pissed off about that. So don't do it. It's not nice. Or you may find out that I'll turn around. If you're going to start marketing to me like that, I'll turn around and I'll put you into my email database as well. So let's stay clean and above board on it, and let's ask permission for people to let us put them in their email marketing campaign. Let's do it through double opt-in whenever possible. You can do it through single opt-in, but you have run the risk of them hitting spam or unsubscribing. So that's your email service provider, which is what you really need to start building an email database from the people that you meet while you're networking and the visitors to your website. And then finally, you need a lead magnet. So what do I mean about a lead magnet? A lead magnet is something of value that you can offer as an incentive for people to sign up for your email database. So maybe you're put together an ebook of, I usually talk to clients about taking their 10 most frequently asked questions and answer those questions in the form of a PDF or an ebook, as we like to call them sometimes, and give that away to the person who's opting into your email database. So you could say, sign up for my email database and you'll receive these 10 fabulous tips on how to market your business through networking. Whatever it is that's your field of expertise, you want to be able to give them something of value. And that's, you know, their first entree into how you do business. So you want to create a lead magnet. You can also, depending on what email service provider you go with, you can use a series of autoresponders. What an autoresponder is you put together, let's say you put together a 6-part social media lessons. You want to introduce them to 6 different social media sites, how to use them. When they confirm their subscription into your email database, the first autoresponder, which is simply an email, and you've constructed the emails in advance. So let's say you've constructed all 6 emails that you're going to be sending out in an automated process. I've opted in. I've said, yes, I want to be part of your email database. Immediately, the first autoresponder, which is an email, comes to me and gives me the first set of information I need as the first part of, let's call it, an online learning course. So I get part one right away. The second autoresponder, and again, it's another email, programmed to go out 7 days later. The third autoresponder is programmed to go out 14 days later. The fourth one is programmed to go out 21 days later. So you can give them a week lapse in time, or you can give them a day lapse in time. You construct the entirety of the emails at once. So let's go back to our example of 6 emails at once. And you say the first email is delivered immediately. The second email is delivered 7 days later. The third email is delivered, and you go on and on like that. So you create it once, but it's an automated process. So no matter how many times people subscribe to your email database, if they subscribe on Monday, they'll get the immediate one. Next Monday, they get the second. The following Monday, the third. If they come into your email database on Thursday, they get the first one immediately, the second one a week later on Thursday, the third one 2 weeks later on Thursday, and that's how an autoresponder works. So a lot of your email service providers will give you some autoresponders. Some of them don't give you any autoresponders. Some of them are autoresponder systems first and email second, like GetResponse is. So that's another way you can create an item of value to be able to reward the person who's decided to opt into your email database. You've given them something of value. So those are the basic 4 components. The domain name, which is the address to your website, you're going to purchase that yourself. You're not going to let anybody else purchase that on your behalf. Your hosting plan, where you're going to purchase that yourself. You're not going to let anybody else purchase that. And that's where you keep all the files that make up your website, the images that display on your website, anything that's downloadable from your website, your documents that make up the website pages are all stored on your hosting. And then an email service provider, Constant Contact, GetResponse, Cooler Email, I think there's iContact, there's MailChimp, Infusionsoft is what I use. Those are email service providers. The one thing I like about MailChimp is you can get in free if you're a startup business, or anybody who signs up for MailChimp can get in free for up to X number of emails. But if you want things like autoresponders, you'll have to bump it up, and that's $10 a month, which isn't really a big expense. So you'll need an email service provider, and then you'll need a lead magnet. You'll need something that you can give away to the people who would like to be part of your email database. You're literally incentivizing them to come into your email database. So those are the things I wanted to share with you today, because for so many small businesses, especially if you're building your first website for your business, I don't want you taken advantage of by anyone. So that's why I build websites for small business owners. I've seen too many business owners taken advantage of by unscrupulous web developers, and I don't want you to be one of those people. So I'm Deborah Simpson. That's the show for this week. You can join me each Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific time. If you have an idea for the show, a business owner you think I should interview, or you just want to talk about the show, you can feel free to contact me at 760-729-6647, or you can send me an email, Deborah, D-E-B-R-A, at NorthSanDiegoBusiness.com. Until next week, I hope you have a safe and prosperous week.
North San Diego Business at Large is produced by Deborah Simpson and Syndicating Your Content, where we bring traffic and income to your website. Please feel free to leave your comments below.